For more information about Ancient Dragon Zen Gate and Tygon's teaching, please visit us at ancientdragon.org.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
We're somewhere in the middle of our two-month practice commitment period, and we've been talking about the Jewel Mirror Samadhi by our 9th century founder of our Soto lineage in China, Dongshan Liangjie. The harmony of difference and sameness that we chanted tonight is kind of by one of his predecessors a few generations before, and kind of a direct predecessor to that chant. But I want to talk this evening about a story about Dongshan, who wrote the Precious Mirror Samadhi, or at least attributed to him. And this is I find this an interesting story about our practice and about our practice tradition. And it's a story about a white rabbit. And it happens to be case 56 in the Book of Serenity koan collection. And it's a pretty short story. And actually, I'm going to read parts of this because it's a chapter from my forthcoming book about Dongshan. But the story is about Dongshan and one of his traveling companions on pilgrimage, Sungmi, who's often referred to as spiritual uncle Sungmi, because he was a Dharma brother of Dongshan, so Dongshan students called him that. And there are a bunch of stories about them, about dialogues between them or situations that happened to them. And in a number of cases, I guess Sungmi was actually senior to Dongshan, but in a number of cases, Dongshan kind of chastises Sungmi for speaking very foolishly despite his venerable age. And this is one of those stories. So they were out walking on pilgrimage, probably walking between various teachers who they visited, and suddenly a white rabbit darted across their path. And Sungmi said, "How swift!" And Dongshan asked him, "What did he mean?" And Sungmi said, "It's just like a commoner becoming a high minister." And Dongshan said, "How could such a venerable person like you speak like that?" And Sungmi asked for Dongshan's understanding, and he said, "After generations of nobility temporarily fallen into poverty." So that's the whole story. But it presents two differing approaches to practice of awakening and to spiritual practice. So, Sungmi says, it starts with Sungmi saying how swift, and there are different ways to translate that character, swift. Other translations, it could be how elegant or how eminent or refined. The point is that this white rabbit was very impressive and grand, not just for his speed, but you know, sort of like there's a colloquial English expression swift, and somehow I think that kind of is part of this the meaning here in this old Chinese. But the question is, how did this rabbit become so eminent and swift? And really the question is, how do Buddhas and great bodhisattvas become elegant and refined? So I'm going to leap forward a little bit to talk about white rabbits. Now, it might be that in the way the story is written up in Dongshan's Recorded Sayings and in the Book of Serenity, let me go back a little bit. Sungmi said it was just like a commoner becoming a high minister. And commoners literally white-robed ones. So that was the way that lay people wore white robes and the monks wore black robes. So it might be just that somebody wrote the story up later, and we don't know how accurate these old stories were, if they actually happened this way or if they were written up much later. But anyway, so maybe it was just a white rabbit because it's, you know, it's literary and it's parallel, it's a white-robed commoner. But, you know, if it was really a white rabbit, then that's kind of interesting to me. Because in East Asia, do any of you know what a white rabbit represents in East Asia? Well, in East Asia, commonly, they see a white rabbit in the moon. Just like we tend to think of the man in the moon. And I checked that a little bit, and it seems like that goes back to maybe Norse mythology, or there's one reference to that says it goes back to Plutarch and Greek lore. Anyway, in East Asia, the it's a very old image to see the white rabbit in the moon. And actually, if you go out and look at a full moon, you could, you know, I've started, maybe it's because I've, you know, so Buddhist or something, but I see the white rabbit before I see the man in the moon. I don't know. You might check it out. But anyway, it's a very customary Buddhist image. And of course, the moon, the full moon especially, whenever they talk in East Asian poetry about the moon, they mean the full moon, usually, unless they say otherwise. And that's an image in Buddhism for wholeness and fullness and full enlightenment. So when this white rabbit ran in front of Dongshan and Songwei, it wasn't just a white rabbit. They're talking about enlightenment itself. They got a glimpse of it passing quickly in front of them. So what they're talking about, you know, maybe they saw a white rabbit, but they're really talking about something deeper. So these stories work, you know, these images and these metaphors work in various ways. So here, the story again, this white rabbit passes quickly in front of them, and Songwei says, "How swift?" And Dongshan asked him, and Songwei said, "Just like a commoner becoming a high minister." And Dongshan was just, you know, appalled. "How could such a venerable person like you say such a thing?" And Songwei asked Dongshan, and he said, "Oh, it's after generations of nobility temporarily fallen into poverty." So, okay, just like a commoner becoming a high minister implies the path of cultivation. A deluded person achieving elevated wisdom through great exertion. You know, some path of self-improvement. So, you know, this is kind of, maybe this is the usual way we think of spiritual practice. And in Buddhism and in various other systems of spiritual development, and, you know, we have all these various stages of development and specified stages. In the commentary in the Book of Serenity, the commentator Wansong says, "Usually we awaken by means of cultivation, entering sagehood from ordinariness. A commoner is directly appointed prime minister." So there's this idea, and this was in early Mahayana too, this idea of long, arduous struggle, many lifetimes of dedicated practice and cultivation. And, you know, I think many Zen students think this is, you know, what our practice is about too. You know, if we sit in many sessions, or if we log many cushion hours, or if we go to many Dharma talks, or read many sutras, or read lots of Dogen, or I don't know, whatever idea you have, eventually, maybe, someday, you know, when you least expect it, ba-doom, the big E, you know. This is, people think this way. I'm not saying any of you think that way, but, you know, there's some people who might think that way. They might think of spiritual practice that way. But that's not the Dongshan and Dogen tradition that we're part of. Dongshan says instead, generations of nobility temporarily fall into poverty. So this is the approach in our tradition. This implies that this eminence, this swiftness of the rabbit, is a facet of inalienable, inherent Buddha nature, not the attainment of some new status or spiritual social climbing. The upright nobility of a Buddha's awareness and kindness is a birthright already present, not some new state that needs to be discovered or achieved. Temporarily falling into poverty, it may be a necessary aspect of the bodhisattva way of life. Bodhisattvas or awakening beings dedicated to universal liberation join fully with suffering beings, become impoverished, at least spiritually, if not also materially, just so they can reenact and exemplify awakening to this innate nobility as an encouragement for others. And of course, sometimes we practice strenuously, not to reach some new exalted state, but to uncover something that's already deeply present. So the commentator in the Book of Serenity, Wonsong, says, if you're first enlightened and then cultivate afterwards, you enter ordinariness from sagehood. Traditional nobility is originally honorable. Though drifting, destitute, in myriad conditions, the basic constitution is still there. So, Dongshan's statement, after generations of nobility temporarily fallen into poverty, refers directly to a parable in the Lotus Sutra, a story about a prodigal son. So briefly, this story, so there's a few Lotus Sutra stories referred to here by Dongshan, and this in this story of a prodigal son, maybe you all know this story. Do you all know? Does anybody not know the story in the Lotus Sutra of the prodigal son? Okay, good. So I can tell it. So in the story, there's a son and father who are separated. The son drifts aimlessly and becomes destitute. Meanwhile, the father moves to another city and becomes very wealthy and highly respected. Eventually, the son in his wandering happens upon the estate of the father. The father immediately recognizes his son and sends some assistance to bring him in. But seeing this wealthy, eminent man in front of his mansion, the son is frightened and runs away. The father understands the humble son's shame and dread and sends his assistants, disguised as lowly menial workers, to invite the son to come and take a job on the estate, shoveling dung in the fields. After a while, when the son feels comfortable with this job, shoveling manure, the father has his assistants steadily give the son more responsibilities until gradually, after a very long period, the son is actually managing the whole estate. When the father is finally about to pass away, he calls for all of his friends and the nobles and citizens of the city and announces to them and to his son that this really is his son. They were separated long before, but that now all of my wealth belongs entirely to my son. And then the sutra goes on to state explicitly that the very rich old man is the Buddha and that we are all like the Buddha's children. So this idea of that we are all part of the Buddha's family, we're all Buddha's children. And yet, we enter sagehood from, we enter, after generations of nobility, we fall into poverty. Actually, our birthright is that of children of Buddha. And so there are many stories in the Lotus Sutra about this. This particular story is presented by four of the Buddha's 10 major disciples who are fully awakened arhats from the old tradition of working their way up to being personally awakened, purified their own personal defilements, but then they find out about this bodhisattva ideal and then hear that one of them was predicted to become a Buddha, and they're very excited. Anyway, eventually in the Lotus Sutra, the Buddha proclaims that everyone who even hears a single line of the sutra, as you have tonight, eventually will realize Buddhahood. It says in the sutra, anyone who hears even a single verse or a single phrase of the wonderful Dharma Flower Sutra and responds in joy, even for a single moment, I assure that one also of supreme awakening. So this image of the Sangha as the family of Buddha actually appears in many sutras. It's very fundamental in Buddhism. This is Buddha's family. We have all entered ordinariness from sagehood and nobility. Even though we are now drifting, perhaps, amid worldly suffering and infected by craving and hatred and ignorance, this basic endowment of awakening is nearby, is it not? So there's a story about Dongshan and his teacher Yunyan. Dongshan confessed to Yunyan that he still had some karmic habits that were not yet eradicated. Imagine such a thing, our great ancestor Dongshan. Still had some karmic habits not yet eradicated. When Yunyan asked how he had been caring for them, Dongshan said that he had not even concerned himself with the Four Noble Truths. Pretty cocky. Yunyan then asked if Dongshan was joyful yet, and he said, "It would be untrue to say that I am not joyful. It is as though I have grasped a bright pearl in a pile of shit." So again, referring to the prodigal son, who is willing to dig in the manure. So maybe, despite this birthright of children of Buddha, still we have some karmic attachments and afflictions that need to be acknowledged and overcome. Realizing underlying awakening may require the hard work of seeing through habitual views and grasping. Even if we realize this underlying reality of being children of Buddha, after generations of nobility temporarily falling into poverty. So there's two different views of awakening, two different approaches to practice here. And in some ways they may look the same, but are we practicing in order to get something in the future that's, you know, or that eventually maybe we'll get, because, you know, if we practice really hard enough or is there something that is already here that we just need to allow itself to uncover? And this may take some work too. The implications of these two approaches are very different, I would say, and it's clear which one Dongshan and our tradition favors. So the Book of Serenity is the original cases and verses were put together by Hongzhe, a predecessor of Dogen a century before in China. He says in his verse, "Matching strength with snow and frost, walking evenly through clouds and sleep." This brings kind of represents the ability of the inherently noble to proceed with calmness, with equanimity, even through difficult, formidable conditions, or even through temporary impoverishment. Later on in his verse, he says, "Favor and disgrace are disturbing. Profoundly trust in yourself. In the real state, one mixes tracks with fishermen and woodcutters." Just ordinary people. So, we could see this in a lot of ways, but, you know, this trust yourself is important. We have to find our way to be ourselves and to be ourselves in the sense of this underlying state of being children of Buddha, of realizing this fundamental endowment that already is here. And yet this also implies the helpful activity of the bodhisattva way, just mixing with ordinary beings, not being because we are children of Buddha, that doesn't mean that we're better than anybody else, because actually, from the point of view of Buddha, everyone has this potential. Everyone has this quality of Buddha nature. So Dongshan clearly prefers the style of not falling into stages of achievement, emphasizing the background generations of nobility. Now, it's okay if you want to practice, you know, various stages of achievement, if you do that from the point of view of, oh, okay, here we are temporarily falling into impoverishment. We can recognize that there is this Buddha nature, and we can play in the field of stages of achievement. But it's not about getting somewhere else. Already, Buddha is present right around your cushion or chair. So I want to close with saying a little bit about more about this white rabbit. More familiar images of the white rabbit from modern times. There's a famous mid-19th century fable about a white rabbit who's also quite elegant, wears a waistcoat with a pocket watch and holding white kid gloves, and is also kind of swift and tries to be even swifter. He's concerned about, oh dear, I shall be too late. And, but he leaves this young girl named Alice to dive down a very deep hole. And it's interesting that when Alice dives down the hole after the white rabbit, she falls into some distress in order to discover herself in a wonderland. And things become curiouser and curiouser. And all conventional sense of logic and proportion has fallen far away. And she's in one of these, maybe it's a Buddha field, I don't know. But one of the interesting things about this wonderland that Alice falls into is she doesn't climb and struggle up to reach some elevated state. It's right there under her feet. She just simply dives down into this hole. It's right there. And then there's more recently, one of my favorite rock singers sang a song called White Rabbit, and she said, one pill makes you larger and one pill makes you small, and the one that mother gives you don't do anything at all. And, you know, it occurs to me, you know, that in the path of cultivation, so that's Gracie Slick and Surrealistic Pillow, maybe in the path of cultivation and working to become eminent, some practices do make you larger. There may be meditations that make you larger. They provide a lofty perspective that may lead to self-inflation. And some practices may make you small, either via a very narrow focus or concentration, or through the humbling awareness of one's self-centeredness. But it seems to me that maybe the pills or the meditation that Buddha gives you don't do anything at all. Just sit. Buddha is here. So anyway, Dongshan's Buddha, Dogen's Buddha, simply remind the practitioner of this inner uprightness, dignity, and the nobility of inner awakening. So, that's Dongshan's white rabbit. Questions, comments, responses, please. Jeremy.
Can you help me out with the imagery of finding a pearl in shit?
Well, yeah. Sometimes we have to dig around in the shit to discover that there's this jewel of Buddha nature. This is what happened to the prodigal son. He spent years digging in the shit and eventually realized that there was this jewel. There's another story in the Lotus Sutra about a jewel. There's actually a couple more, but there's one that about two friends, and they were up late drinking, and the host had to leave, and the guest was kind of having a hard time. So the host, before he left, sewed a jewel into the robe of the guest and left. And the guest woke up and, you know, host was gone and just and they split. And years later, they ran into each other, and the former guest was really disheveled and had you know really having a hard time. And his friend said, "What happened to you? I gave you that jewel." And he didn't realize it was there in his pocket all the time. He showed him, realized that. And so this is also an image of being having this Buddha nature, being a child of Buddha the whole time.
Would you say it's not that the Dalai Lama mentioned found a white pearl, but that the ship is the white pearl?
Well, I don't know. I don't know that you have to go that far. But the white pearl grows out of the irritation that the oyster feels. So, but it's not that we, I don't think. It's not that you have to go looking for, difficulty, and you have to go looking for shit, You don't have to look for problems. I mean, probably, they'll come to you. You don't have to go looking for suffering, The world will provide that. And as I said, if you manage to solve all your problems, someone will come and give you theirs as well, so... Other white rabbit stories or responses? Hey, Joanne.
Actually, when I was a little girl, and I'm just now thinking about this, it's kind of funny. I went to a mother-daughter tea when I was very young. And they had a magician there. Mm-hmm. And they proceeded to pull the white rabbit out of the hat, and I got to take it home with me. Wow. And I didn't know that it was all prearranged with my parents, and they had okayed it with them first, and I just thought it was the coolest thing that ever happened to me in my entire life. Then we got another one, and actually it was male and female. So pretty soon
Bunny
we
rabbits.
Had... rabbits coming out of our ears, basically. We had rabbits in every possible outbuilding, and then my father decided he was going to take them to this sale barn and sell them all, and then we went back down to two. But
oh, you still kept two?
Yeah. Or did we? I don't know, my memory fails me.
Yeah.
But I was the rabbit keeper, so I had the duty of taking care of the rabbit, and in southern Wisconsin in winter they lived out in the hutch outside, so I had to make sure that they had water and food and all that. I had to go out there and take care of them, so I did that for a long time. It was really pretty fun.
Yeah, rabbits are cute. So again, the basic message here from Dongshan is just, Buddha is here. You don't have to go looking for trouble, The rabbits will show up. We are all children of Buddha. And, sometimes it takes some work to remember that. Jim.
I was caught by a phrase. I sort of blinked for a moment. I think it was a slip of the tongue. Falling into enlightenment, two said along the way.
Mm.
And it's a notion for me that what's falling into impoverishment and be looked at from another angle is getting down to bedrock.
Yeah.
And otherwise known as Buddha nature.
Yeah.
And that can come either as an interruption of, or in a way, an outcome of all of that grooming, seeking after perfection, putting in quality time and practice.
Yeah, the issue of, you know, do you practice trying to become special because you think you're a commoner, or do you practice as children of Buddha, doing what's necessary to really to actualize, to realize that? Maybe sometimes it doesn't look so different, but you know, people get into thinking, people get self-defeated by thinking, oh, I'm just, you know, I'm no good, and, you know, there's these special beings up there who are Buddhas, and I think that can cause a lot of problems. If we realize that just by virtue of being here, just by making it into this room, you are children of Buddha, then, you know, some idea of, you know, unworthiness or something that some people get into, that I think is part of, I don't know, something in our culture, you know, that's not necessary. And then, okay, well, how do we go? The point then isn't to discover something or understand something or figure something out or become some, you know, to do some super power, you know, to work super hard at some yogic exercise to reach some super state. The point is just, how do I express that quality that's somehow here already, and it may mean digging through all the ancient twisted karma that's part of, you know, that we've accrued by through the generations, through having fallen into impoverishment. But, you know, this Buddha nature, to talk about it in another way, is here. So there's some different feeling about practice in these two different, from these two different approaches. And I think it makes a difference. And very clearly, you know, and working on Dongshan as I have been for a while now, it's very clear where Dongshan comes. This story is very clear, but in other stories too, it's clear where Dongshan comes from in this. In terms of, I've talked about it in terms of just this, rather than in this kind of immediacy of suchness, as opposed to you know, trying to reach, pass through various stages, pass through, you know, whatever system you think you need to pass through to become worthy or whatever. And there are those kinds of approaches, and that's fine, and maybe those are good for some people, but anyway, this is clearly where Dongshan, and I would say Dogen and Sugyu Roshi and our whole tradition is coming from. It's right here. And we sit to express that, we sit to appreciate that, we sit to see how that works for each of us. So it's just about time, but are there, is there a last comment? Yes, Jerry.
One of the things that strikes me between the two approaches is, if you take the approach that there are sort of gates you have to pass through to get, it leads you to think that there are some people that won't be able to get there because they don't get through the gates.
Right.
You know, and if you take the other approach, it's like, well, you're already there. It's just a matter of recognizing the path you're on. So it seems to be a little more inclusive, I guess. But you could just say, oh, look where I am.
Yeah. Yeah, and we each have our different way of expressing it.